So much has changed in the business landscape ever since the onset of the pandemic. The kinds of things consumers want, how workers do their jobs, the market for commercial real estate where we do business, and access to cash and credit. Just about 1,000 other things too. So many of them still in flux. Whether you're an entrepreneur yourself, an investor, or just a consumer, it's something to keep an eye on in Michigan. Small businesses make up most of our state's economy.
Really starting in the summer of 2020, as we were in just a very, very turbulent time, we saw more people start to turn to entrepreneurism as almost as a response to the pandemic. And the why is a really complicated question to ask, but we were very delighted at our association anyway to see that this heightened interest in starting new businesses has persisted.
The Small Business Association of Michigan just reported 120 different statistical measurements to give us a picture of what's happening among the state's small businesses. Today, we're going to make some sense of the numbers in the SBAM scorecard and revisit some of our conversations with people who've been experiencing these things firsthand. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. SBAM President and CEO Brian Calley says the number of business applications in Michigan started to grow pretty early in the pandemic, as early as the summer of 2020. And it hasn't really stopped.
And now as we are well into 2023, and we see these monthly numbers, so when they say business applications, what that means is people that have filed for a tax ID number with the IRS to operate as an independent business, that those have sustained at a very consistently higher level over the course of the last few years. And I think that bodes well for our future.
Now, when we say small business, that can mean a whole lot of different things. It can mean businesses as diverse as a brick and mortar ice cream shop on a main street in Michigan, or a company with less than 500 employees that supports automotive business, or standalone contractors like hairstylists who work out of their homes, or tax preparers in business for themselves. Can you tell us a little bit about the balance of small businesses that we have in Michigan right now amidst that flood of creation?
There are hundreds of thousands of small businesses that do range from sole proprietors, an individual person who might be working as a contractor or part of that gig economy you've heard so much about, all the way through automotive suppliers, a lot of different forms. The good news is that they're all up. So when you file for your a tax ID number with the IRS, you indicate whether or not you're going to have planned wages, whether or not you expect to have employees, or if it's just you operating as an individual. And we see both of those up and up at a sustained level, which bodes well for our future. The independent contractors have become an increasingly important part of our economy, but it's always been important in terms of new business starts. It's not unusual for a professional service provider to leave a W-2 job and have their former employer be their first client, but for them to hang their own shingle and be their own boss. And what's exciting, what we see happening, though, is that not only are more people turning to entrepreneurship and wanting to be their own boss, but as we measure their survival rate over time, how many make it past that critical five-year period where they're out of the startup phase and now are a more mature business? So we see that five-year survival rate increasing as well.
And sometimes people are finding entrepreneurship to be an attractive option right from the start. When Frederick Paul started reselling sneakers online, he was still a student and basically an eBay hobbyist.
So I remember just listing shoes on eBay, running down to the FedEx on campus, shipping them off. And then within like 2 months, I had almost sold like my collection. I'm like, okay, instead of getting charged this huge percentage by selling these online, let me try to create my own website for this where I can, you know, get more of the proceeds and more of the profit.
But eventually, that side hustle turned into his full-time gig and a brick-and-mortar location, Fahrenheit 313.
So I created my website, but then it was like no traction. I had like so many fire shoes on there, but I felt like it was, I didn't have a brand name yet, right? I didn't have a reputation yet. So people may have went to the site, but it's like, wait, what is this? I don't necessarily trust this. So at that point, I said, okay, I need to have a brick-and-mortar.
Now, all of this happened just before the pandemic. Frederick opened up Fahrenheit 313 just 3 days before the March 2020 lockdown. It was a rough start, but 3 years later, his shop on Livernois in Detroit is still going strong. I want to talk some more about the survival rate, but before we do, I'm just still trying to get my head around this. I mean, it's business school 101 that a recession or a slow time is a great time to start a business because you may have less competition and in a number of ways, but the disruption that we were experiencing in 2020 was almost total. How do you make sense of this?
During times of recession and uncertainty, people do tend to want to be their own boss more often. That's a phenomenon that we've seen before. So that's not terribly surprising. What's surprising is that it's so much more than before. And I think that has to do with flexible work environments that more and more people find themselves in. In the past, it was always a matter of, can I afford to leave my W-2 job and go start a new business? What we see more and more often happening now is that the new business is really something that's kind of started on the side in addition to a W-2 job. There's so much more flexibility in the work world these days that it makes it easier for somebody to start a business but not put all their eggs in that basket at one time.
We need to take a short break. More with Brian Kelly on Michigan Small Businesses in a minute.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
Support for the Stateside podcast comes from the University of Michigan's Go Blue Guarantee, committed to keeping a U of M undergraduate education within reach of all Michigan residents, regardless of socioeconomic status. Programs are available for all three campuses. More at goblueguarantee.umich.edu.
So we learned from this report that more new businesses made it over a five-year arc. Would that be surprising to you under other circumstances?
It is a bit surprising that it went up at a time when it just seemed like there's so many challenges and so many changes. But I don't think that we can discount the fact that there was a lot of stimulus that was kind of pumped into the economy over the last few years. And while it did create some hardship and some trouble, things like inflation, it also did create opportunity. There was just an excess of resources and cash, and people could try new things. Consumers were definitely in a mood to spend over the last few years. And so not only do you have new businesses forming, you have people that have W-2 wages in addition to this new business that's forming, so they can actually make it through those early stages. The business doesn't have to pay all of the bills for that person to survive. I think all of these factors together have kind of aided in that survival rate.
Statistically, I wonder if the business survival numbers are affected by just the sheer number of firms that failed or went through other catalytic things in the first few months of 2020. I just met a couple last night. They had their own business providing services to public schools in their area and just went under in 2020. Do you think that it's possible the numbers are affected by that, just the what else was going on at the time?
It most certainly is part of that mix. And there's so many ups and downs. And I think it's important to always keep in mind, as we look at these top line economic statistics and see the economy going in a certain way, that there has been so much upheaval that the stories on the ground, depending on your industry and your business model, are very different. So if you're talking to somebody who is helping people make a transition into providing services in a more virtual way, business has been booming.
Or say you ran a couple of drive-in hot dog and burger joints, like Dog and Suds owner Carl Hostica. His business has locations in West Michigan.
It didn't take people long at all to realize that by design, the old-fashioned drive-in is limited contact, And it was actually, I believe that we were one of the few places that was able to, with slight modifications, of course, we were doing the sanitizing and the extra work to ensure everyone's safety. But we were able to operate at close to, if not 100% capacity.
That was great for businesses that had some built-in advantages of physical space. But Brian Kelly notes that there were definitely plenty of painful transitions.
But if your business model relied on office worker traffic being physically present in your neighborhood, then you really haven't felt that type of a comeback and increase in demand.
One of the businesses that relies heavily on this kind of foot traffic, especially in a college town, is your local coffee shop. And the owner of one campus coffee favorite in Ann Arbor, Espresso Royale, was not able to make things work. David Lynn closed down all his Espresso Royale locations, along with Bubble Island, a boba tea shop that he owned.
Both of those things I had been operating for a long time, the bubble tea shop for 20 years. And when I shut that down, around 300 people lost their jobs, and a lot of them were veteran employees that had been there for decades. And so it really took a toll. I would say that I was emotionally bankrupt for a while.
In David Lynn's case, he needed somewhere to put all the feelings and his energy. He went on to start a fund for businesses that were in trouble. And today, he's working with investors who want to get involved in food and beverage businesses. Despite the closures of businesses during the pandemic, Brian Kelly says he thinks that many of the changes have created more opportunities for entrepreneurs, not fewer.
The economy, I think, favors flexibility and kind of a nimbleness that comes from entrepreneurship. And many entrepreneurs are finding that to be a competitive advantage in a world where the bigger players sometimes have a difficult time moving quickly.
We definitely saw this nimble entrepreneurship in action when we talked to Ryan Griffin. He's the owner of The Fuller Cut in Ypsilanti. And we spoke with him in May 2020 about what it could possibly look like to cut hair at a time when people were scared to be near each other.
But what I've learned, what I've noticed, and what I think is going to happen, I'm thinking it's going to be a lot more home service taking place as opposed to people going to shops just from fear of sitting in a shop being around, you know, 8, 9, 10 people. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be a little different on the other side. You know, people just being a little bit cautious of going right back into a barbershop or a beauty salon or a nail tech.
Ryan Griffin's experiences suggest some important new factors for workers. What does it mean to work around people who are skittish being close to others? What does it mean when you don't feel comfortable working around other people? A lot of employers have lost staff who don't want the animosity of customer service. Let's get back to Brian Kelly and SBAM's stats.
You included some statistics in the scorecard report about labor force participation. It's down overall. We can talk about what that means, but why is that an important stat from a small business perspective?
It's clear that places need businesses to be successful, provide jobs, but businesses need people. And people has been really the toughest part of the business in the last several years and getting tougher because we've got a kind of a perfect storm of demographic challenges. So we have an aging population. Birth rate is not what it was before. So just the number of people that are graduating from high school, entering the workforce is smaller than it was. And then the proportion of those, the smaller population, the proportion of them in the workforce is actually less than it was, especially if you look back 20 years, it's substantially less.
And for many workers, particularly in the service industry, the risk and reward calculations didn't add up anymore. Probably everyone has a food business in their neighborhood with a help wanted sign. James Regatto owns the award-winning restaurant Mabel Gray in Hazel Park. We spoke to him about the state of the industry in fall 2021.
So I think the people that kind of relied on restaurant work and kind of, you know, that some of the transient workers that maybe take jobs at, you know, Coney Islands or like Starbucks, they were completely abandoned. I mean, like just left in the dust. And, you know, the government was kind of slow to react. So like you didn't start seeing, you know, unemployment boost up or, you know, some of these, it felt like you were, you know, absolutely on unstable ground. So I think a lot of people bailed on this industry and then didn't come back.
Brian Calley says he thinks there's a chance that technology could be used to fill some of the gaps left by human workers.
So those present challenges for growth and just finding people. But what that is also driving is driving a revolution in productivity that is causing new technologies to be developed at rates and speeds that we hadn't seen before and deployed in smaller scale operations like we haven't seen before. So automation and artificial intelligence being deployed in settings that just a few years ago we never would have thought of. It's a response to this shrinking pool and these demographic challenges that we have, that businesses will innovate to find a way still to do what they do with fewer people. And it'll take a few years, I think, for us to really understand how deep and wide this goes.
Just one more question. The numbers on business lending showed that commercial loans from traditional banks are not in great proliferation in Michigan right now. And yet, clearly, from what you just told us, people were getting some kind of capital to start businesses. Where would you say lending is coming from right now? And is there anything anything important that tells us about the finance climate in Michigan?
I think this is one of the stats that warrants more investigation in the future to understand how we've seen such strong growth, and yet proportionately, or at least compared to other states, the amount of that growth that was financed through traditional bank financing was one of the bottom 10 states. So I don't have the answer for that. It's one of the things that stuck out to us and the economists that we work with. There's something to really gain from that. Our economy is still, people are getting access to capital and they're figuring out ways to start new businesses, clearly, because it is happening and it's happening at a wider clip. But it seems like the traditional bank financing is the proportion of the total is smaller than other states. And we say it makes us the bottom 10 state in terms of access to that type of financing. But maybe it's not a bad thing. You know, still, clearly, businesses are being formed. So we're going to have to get to the bottom of that one.
And that's the Stateside Podcast. I'm April Baer. You can find full Stateside episodes at michiganradio.org. Today's podcast was produced by Ronia Cabansag and April Van Buren. Other producers on our show are Mike Blank and Mercedes Mejia. Interns on our show are Ellie Katz, Dan Netter, and Olivia Moradian. Our podcast editor is Rachel Ishikawa. Our executive producer is Laura Weber Davis. Music for the show comes from Blue Dot Sessions and from Audio Network. Thanks for listening. We'll be back in your feeds tomorrow. Bye-bye.